So we're in our second of this series of humanity's evolution, and today is Heart of Love. I think we're squarely in it. I'm feeling really in it. I hope you're feeling really in it already. And I wanted to bring forth this scripture that you probably all know. If you know one scripture at all in from the Bible, you probably have heard 1 Corinthians 13. It's often used at weddings, right? It's just a beautiful testimony to love. And when Paul wrote it, you know, at the end, to give you a little familiarity, it ends with, now these things, three things remain, faith, hope, and love, and the greatest of these is love. And when Paul wrote it, it was a letter to the Corinthians, to the church of Corinth, and there they were having a lot of conflict. It seems wherever humans go, right? There's stuff. There can be stuff. And that church was just trying to get, you know, they're all coming together, and they're coming together from all different walks of life that haven't been together before, really, in one place, and then celebrating and learning about their spirituality together. And there were people from, you know, the various classes, mostly there was the rich and the poor, not a lot of in between. And, you know, there were Jews and pagans, and there were different ideas about marriage and how the rules and regs of that go. And there were just all kinds of stuff going on that caused a lot of clash. So Paul wrote this to them as a kind of balm, an antidote to conflict, right? All about love, the power of love. And that is what love is in one way, isn't it? It's an antidote to any, wherever we have conflict, wherever we have clash, wherever we have misunderstanding or fear. And it's so much more than that, because it's still alive and well for us today. Has anybody ever read the end of the book before the beginning of the book? Do you ever do that? Anybody ever go to the end anyway to just see where are we headed here? Yeah, a few of us have done that before, especially with nonfiction. I'll do that. Fiction, I don't want to ruin the plot. But and so it's kind of, today what I'd like to do is reverse 1 Corinthians 13 and go to the destination first, and then we'll backtrack, okay? And so here's the destination. This is the end of, you know, right before the end of the greatest of these. And it says, for now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, but then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. This sense of, I'm on this path of evolution, I'm continuing along my spiritual journey, and I get a glimpse of where I'm headed is to that place where I recognize the fullness and the wholeness and the divinity that I am, where I see the highest and best of myself mirrored to me clearly. In the New Living Translation, it says it a little bit different. It says, we see puzzling reflections right now. And it says that then we will see everything with perfect clarity, and all that we know that is partial and incomplete right now will then be known completely. Everything will be known then, even as God knows us completely. So there's this sense of the mirror gets clearer as we go. And have you experienced that on your spiritual journey? That you gain clarity, you gain some understanding, and then you know from then on, this works. This, when I'm in more alignment, this works, and I see myself and I know myself more truly, and I see and know others in their more true nature, in their essence. So that's really where Paul is taking us, where he's helping us see that we're headed in this process of evolution. Clarity of our divine self, clarity of beholding the truth in others as well. And then there's this then idea, right? Then, as if it's some faraway time. But then is now. Right? Then is, it's already arrived, right? Then we are arriving. There is no sort of far casting anymore. We're always becoming. We're always evolving. But we really are hitting these arrival points. Many of you nodded your head when I said you have these moments of clarity, right? You have these moments of remembrance, of knowing, of saying, ah, there I am. I know what it feels like to be in the power. I know what it feels like to feel the love flow through me. I know what it feels like to give the love fully. I know what it feels like to keep my heart open. All of that, right? We have those moments and we have our forgetting, but the forgetting moments are getting slimmer and slimmer, and the shift back into alignment is getting more and more and more. You are cumulatively learning and growing and evolving, and we are all evolving at a much higher speed. Last week I was talking, I didn't plan it, but I was talking about we're on the fast train to evolution, and you know, so on. You remember, now I'm going to launch into this and I'm forgetting her name, Mary, the unwitting mystic who came, Mary Read. And I just happened to open the first page of her book just to see, I saw she had a new book out, and she was like, the first thing she was talking about is like, we're on the bullet train of human evolution, you know? It's just like, wow, here we are. We're all kind of talking and feeling into the same thing, that it's happening here and now. It's no longer this then. It's no longer this faraway place. It's like, whoa, we're in it. Does it mean it's perfect from here? No. Does it mean it's all easy and fluid? And no, sometimes, and sometimes not. But because we stand where we stand now, we're okay with that. Because we stand in a place of spiritual maturity, which is the next place in reverse order that Paul takes us. He tells us, what does it take, really, to get to that place? And this is what he says. When I was a child, I spoke like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I grew up, I put away childish things. Is he talking about just aging? No. You know little wise beings that come right out of the womb, and they're amazing, right? And we know people that are very far advanced into their years that are still in a very kind of maybe childish mindset. It's not to judge anybody. It's just to say we're all on a path. And Paul is saying to get to the clear space, to be able to see yourself in the truth of who you are, to be able to stand up in the magnificence that you are, and to see and interact with people at that level, which we all want to be at that level because things really click at that level. And there's a lot of joy and engagement and passion for life when we are there. And so that sense is, how do we get there? Well, we put away those old childish ways, and we spiritually mature. And so what does that look like when we are spiritually mature? When we are spiritually mature, we're able to hear through the noise of distraction. There's a lot of noise of distraction in our world, isn't there? But we're able to hear through it as we spiritually mature. We're able to go to those places. We're able to, as Carolyn teaches, cut through, right? Cut through that noise, that distraction. We're able to see through the smoke and mirrors of sensationalism. Boy, we get sensationalism big, don't we? There's been a like frenzy in the media that just seems like it's nonstop from all angles, and it just continues and it continues. But then we are able then to stand in a space that says, okay, I can see what I need to see. I can extract what I need to know, and I can move forward and not waste my time any longer getting sucked into dramas or what ifs and so on it goes, right? So when we are in a place of spiritual maturity, instead of getting involved in the dividing and the separating and the judging kind of mindset, we go into a place of celebration of diversity. We go into a place of true inclusion and belonging and a sense of diversity is a beautiful thing, and all are welcome, right? All are welcome. All aspects of self are welcome here. All expressions of humanity are welcome in my circle, in my community, in my spaces. In fact, they are celebrated. That's what love does. And that's what love does as it matures through us. It helps us grow. When we are in a place of spiritual maturity, we disengage from drama. Right? Drama may come your way, but you don't have to get in the sandbox with it. Go sinking down, 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 right? Instead, you can be in a space of honoring the feelings that are present, holding to the facts. There's a place for decency and honesty and integrity when we are spiritually mature. There's not really a lot of space for drama. Why do we even want to go there? Right? Well, drama like theater, that's fun, right? But not like everyday drama. Theater in everyday life, not so great. Yeah. And it's, you know, when we spiritually mature, we move out of that victim consciousness. We move out of that space of, as Michael Beckwith talks about, life happens to me. And we move to the next level of life happens through me. And then the final level, or maybe just one more step, is the as me. Life happens as me. I am affecting life. I'm impacting life. Life is moving with me and through me. And I'm co-creating life. I'm not a victim of life. So all of this and more, in short, what we are doing when we are spiritually maturing is we are mastering love. One step at a time, one relationship at a time, one feeling at a time, one moment at a time, one connection at a time, and all of it at once. Because nothing really seems to move at that slow pace anymore. Yet, we can be in that stillness. We can be in that ever-present moment that reminds us of who we are. And we can relish and revel in that space as well. So my mom has been living with us for a couple of years, and she was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I think it was about 4 years ago. She has some physical issues as well, and she's changed a lot. I mean, I see it even weekly and monthly. I see, you know, changes happening. Some of you are caregivers of parents or have had, you know, loved ones in your life who are going through changes through their aging process. And some days it's really sweet and some days it's quite challenging, you know, to see somebody change so much. And my mom is not a lunatic. She's a friend of victim consciousness. She knows victim consciousness really well. Her mantra every day is aging sucks. And it often is followed by, I bet you can't wait to get like this or to be here. And I think the old school new thought, cancel, cancel. Because that is not my path. But it is my mom's path for whatever reasons. And at this point, I don't think teaching or changing mindsets is really, you know, it's never ours to do anyway. Exactly. But to be, right? Just to be the best we can be. But what is mine to do and what is Brenly's to do is to be the presence of love in every way we can possibly be. Be the infinite, infinite presence of patience. Patience. Wow, that has been a lesson, right? Everything moves at a different pace. And yeah, and you have to do a lot of things over and again. And it's just part of the process, right? We get to be the presence of compassion and to give somebody dignity. It is a spiritual maturation process every day, an opportunity to grow. And I know many of you have had these experiences in your life in various ways that have come to you. And I say, embrace it. Meet it with like so much love, like you can't even believe there's that much love in you. And it's like, and then it, you know, it's something hits you sideways and you go, you know what, I'm going into love and I'm standing in love and I'm being love and I'm being compassionate and I'm being patient and I'm being kindness and I'm being inclusive and I'm being thoughtful and I'm going to turn around and do it again right now and I'm going to turn around and do it again right now. And no matter what is said or what is done, my mom's an excellent food critic. And oh, Brenly has learned. I'm like, honey, don't ask. Don't ask. Don't ask how the dinner is. Don't ask how the food is. Just button it up. And it's so hard not to. We're trying to make conversation, right? How's dinner?
No!
So this is what we're up to, right? In our lives, every day, an opportunity to say, I'm going to open my heart more. I'm going to love more. I'm going to be taught about how to love and hone the skill of love as much as I can possibly hone the skill of love in this lifetime. And every minute, an opportunity to eke a little more love out, right? And we are going to fall short. Of course we do. We will, because we're on this journey. To learn. We're here at Earth School to learn. It's not perfect. Love can be very messy, right? Love can hurt. Love can be hard. But what else would we ever want to sign up for but to love? Because it's the best, isn't it? When you feel loved, when you feel love with another person, when you feel the love of spirit, when you know that you are loved like nobody and nothing can love you, but there is this spirit that just loves you, that you live inside and you move and have your being within, and that it is within you, and you get to be in that dance of life in a body of light and have this heart that you can just keep open and keep open and keep open. We have these instincts to shut, right? We have these old egoic ways that say, oh, I got to protect, I got to shut it. Not anymore. We don't need that stuff anymore. The doors are open. You know, the old thing people would say, like, cover yourself, shield yourself in energetic light before you leave the house, especially if you're an empath or a sensitive person. That stuff is out the window now. You know why? Because when we shield ourselves, we shield out the good too. And so the shield is inside. The shield is here. Love never fails. Love is, your life is fail-safed in love. You can go anywhere and do anything because you're like a warrior of love. And nothing can touch us, really, truly. You know, I often think of that image. I think I've told you about this time I was in Assisi, Italy, and there was this, I was just having this moment with this image of Jesus, and, you know, I didn't grow up Catholic, so I wasn't that familiar with, like, the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and he had the thorny crown and the blood, and, I mean, it was pretty graphic, and there was this heart, and he had his, you know, I think there's that, you know, I sound so unschooled, I'm sorry, in this, but there's a position that his hands are in with the Sacred Heart, I think. Is it like two fingers? And I just got, like, as I was looking at it, like, you cannot touch me. Nothing can harm me. I mean, you can persecute me. You can, you know, do terrible things to me physically. You can crucify me. You cannot touch this. I am fail-safe in love. There is nothing to fear. And I don't have to put up a big shield because I want the good in as much as I want to keep out whatever I call bad. Because we are unafraid when we are in love. We have no need for weapons and all that stuff. When we are in the presence of love, we are embodiment of love. We are moving with a heart of love. It's all courage. That's what the heart is. That's actually the root of the word courage. Is heart. It means heart. To be somebody who is centered in love is to be somebody who's courageous, courageous to be vulnerable, courageous to share who they are, like Lariah shared earlier. It takes a lot of bravery to say, this is who I am, and self-love, to say, I'm finally going to allow myself to be the truth of who I am. It's powerful. It's brave. And it's who every one of us is in truth. So Paul comes back around to the verse, the beginning of Corinthians, with probably what you know, this verse. If I could speak all the languages of the earth and of the angels, but didn't love others, I would only be a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I had the gift of prophecy, and if I understood all of God's secret plans, and if I possessed all knowledge, and if I had such a faith that I could move mountains, but I didn't love others, I would be nothing. If I gave everything I had to the poor, and even if I sacrificed my body, I could boast about it, but if I didn't love others, I would have gained nothing. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable, and it keeps no record of wrongs done. Right? We all know that move, don't we? That's why everybody's laughing. Do you know the move, right? You got the back pocket list. And somebody says something hurtful, especially the people who are closest to you, and out comes the list. It's a long scroll. It might even be pretty writing, you know? And we can go one by one through all the things that have happened that we have been wronged by. But love doesn't do that, so you better burn your scroll. Love never gives up. Love never loses faith. It's always hopeful. It endures through every circumstance. It does not rejoice in injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins. In sum, love is everything. And nothing else, it seems, matters when it doesn't have love. Nothing is gained without love. Nothing maybe even really exists without love. Interesting, in this version that I just read, the New Living Translation, it doesn't say without love or if I had not love. It says if I didn't love others. Very specific, if I didn't love others. It gives us our marching orders to go out there in the world and love others, because that's really what it's all about. That's how we put our love into action. So there's a mirror in every relationship, right? There's an opportunity to use that mirror in every relationship. And the more we evolve, the closer we get to that clarity of seeing the truth and seeing the divinity and the goodness in another is, guess what, a reflection of ourselves. So our relationships also are holding up mirrors for us. As Eckhart Tolle said, did you know relationships aren't to make you happy? What? It's like, wait a second, that just ruined every romance movie I've ever seen. Are you kidding me? He says, relationships are here to make you conscious. It's a nice reframe, isn't it? And then guess what? When we get more conscious, we get happier. So it happens anyway. There are cultural creatives all over the globe that are doing amazing things right now to evolve us on all kinds of levels, and education and environment and technology. I mean, the innovations and the thinking behind a lot of it, and the heart behind a lot of it, is pretty profound. Most of the things that I've seen have a spiritual component in it that's the linchpin of how the thing works. Right? This works if we have this part. There's something called Theory U by Otto Scharmer. And the U is about connecting with each other. And at the bottom of the U, it's all about connecting with source and presence. And it's absolutely essential to go through the bottom of the U to do that, to drop into the depth of U, I guess we could say, to go through that arrow that shoots us up into the evolving future. And all, you can look at spiral dynamics, all this collective spiritual that goes upward, and this has the same ideas in it, very spiritual. The Great Turning by Joanna Macy, who's a deep ecologist and Buddhist teacher, she talks about our times as a time of the Great Turning, and all of her teachings are very spiritual about how we make the turn to move together and create a world where all life is awakened and all life thrives in conscious oneness, as our vision says here at Unity. There's so much good, there's so much excitement, there's so much stuff going on in the world. And all these folks, whether they come from spirituality or psychology or research or whatever disciplines they come from, they're talking about how the shift now is from ego consciousness to eco consciousness. Now, we all know ego consciousness pretty well, right? We could all probably define that. They say it's driven by self-interest and competition and individual success and worldly power. But eco consciousness is about interconnectedness. It's about collaboration. It's about having the kind of heart that says, I care about the greater good. It's about the sense of that we're all in this together, that I care about the well-being of others because we understand that we are inextricably linked. We understand, in fact, deeper still, that we are one. And so we are moving together as one. We basically have two operating systems, right? The brain and the heart. These are, I mean, the body, of course, is holding all of this, and the body has its own wisdom. But these main operating systems are what we use to move through the world, at least right now. And often when we go to the mind, we don't access so much the higher mind as habitually, but we're really good at accessing what's called the lower mind or the surface mind or just the mind that is in the physical realm, which also, you know, plays into the ego. And it's through that that, you know, it's kind of like we've used that kind of to its fullness in terms of solving everyday problems. You know what Einstein said? You can't solve things at the level of the problem, right? That same level that it was created. But yet we still try over and over and over again, you know? Years ago, my niece was in a relationship, and the rest of the family didn't really see it going anywhere. But, you know, we do what we do in relationships, right? We have to play it out for ourselves. And every time she'd come to a family gathering, and usually he wouldn't come, I'd say, how come Richard didn't come? Oh, he's home trying to figure things out. This was the refrain. Trying to figure things out was a long, many years of figuring things out. She worked two jobs, paid most of the bills, did all the cooking, all the cleaning, so on, right? And she just stood by thinking he was going to figure things out because he said he was figuring things out. But I don't think he ever figured. I mean, maybe he's, I hope he's figured things out by now, but she's moved on. But that's the thing, right? That's what we do. It's like, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to figure it out. And we go through the problem and we mull through the problem and we lay awake at night trying to figure out the problem. But it's at that same level. And guess what? All the while, we've got this other operating system. It's a solution center. The heart is a solution center. It's like, wow, all I had to do was drop into my heart and ask my heart. That's all that had to happen. And then I could have had my answer, and I could have moved on, and I could have resolved this issue. I could have healed this thing. Yes. I'm here to tell you, yes. That's it. We're just habitually trying to figure it out on the same wheel. And all the while, we've got this amazing solution center, healing center, place of that's portal to the divine love, the portal to the presence of God. And all we got to do is drop in and ask. Kids get this very, like, organically. And that tells us that it's very natural for us to go to our hearts. I remember when Grace, our goddaughter, was living with us, and she was struggling with some things, not figuring out how to do something. And I said, well, what does your heart say? Immediately she had her answer. It was like, I hardly skipped a beat, and she knew. Because it's natural for us to go to the heart. It's natural for us to go to love and let love pour forth its gifts for us, to each other. So when we go to the heart center, how do we go there? Well, we always want a way and a how-to. So meditation, we know. Heart math has all kinds of practices. Heart-centered listening. But let's not complicate it either. Breathe, drop into your heart. You're there. You're there. You're in the presence of love. You're in the portal to divine love. You're being reminded of the truth of who you are. You can flow out that love with such ease because you start to fill up with it in no time, just like in our meditation. You're just, you know, we take a few moments in the silence and we hear some beautiful music and suddenly we're just flowing with love. And there's so much of it, we just share it, and guess what? It keeps filling. It's like an eternal spring. There is no end to the source of love. It's infinite, and we're plugged into it, and we're made of it, and we're here to share it. And that, my friends, is what the world needs. Love, love, love. There's a cry for love out there. There's a desire for love in here, right? And it's already here. So let's stop figuring it out and start flowing it out. St. Teresa of Avila was, just an example of somebody who had so many life challenges and so many accomplishments all at the same time. She lived during the Spanish Inquisition. She was pretty much single-handedly reforming the Carmelite order. She would go out on stagecoaches across the rough countryside, and she would speak and teach under intense gender repression. She had major health challenges, so you can imagine what those journeys were like. The order had financial issues, on and on it goes. And yet, in the midst of all, she spoke, she taught, she wrote a book. I mean, it's kind of painful to read the beginning of her book, because you can see how she had to write what a lowly woman she was and how much the men knew in the church, and so on, in order to even publish it. But she got it out there, considered a mystical masterpiece, The Interior Castle. But here's what she said. It's not the important thing in life is not to think much, but to love much. She had to think a lot to make her way through all of that. But what she knew, and what we all know, is it's not really about that. It's not that we don't love our thinking minds and appreciating our thinking minds, but love is leading the charge. Love needs to lead the charge. It's time for love to be put at the front of this course that we are cutting together into a new humanity, into a new earth. And if we individually let our hearts lead the way, let love lead the way, we contribute to the energy of that, that is moving us up and out into the human family and the earthly, new earth experience that we are all wanting and heading for. So we got to trust it, right? Trust the process, trust the heart. Brenly's nephew and girlfriend were visiting, and we went up to the American River and went rafting a couple weeks ago. And I don't think we'd ever been in rapids, and it was like a level, it wasn't five, but it was a level three rapids. And you get put into a boat with strangers, right? So there's four of us in the family that went, and then two strangers, and then a guide we've never met, and off we go into these rapids, right? And it's a lot like today. It's like we're in this boat together, folks. Right? There's family and there's friends, but there's also strangers, and you got to learn to paddle in sync. And you better learn fast, because level three's coming up. And you better listen to the guide, because they know where they're going, right? So all of this is happening. And what was our mission? To have fun, for no one to get hurt, And we did. We had fun. Nobody got hurt. We did watch another boat that wasn't having as much fun. Certainly the guide wasn't having as much fun, because everybody's paddles were just kind of dragging in the water, and there was a kid running around in the raft, and it was a mess every time they came up to the rapids. And she's like, "You have to help me paddle." So, we have those moments too, right? Are there rapids ahead in our journey? Absolutely. Can it get messy in love? Absolutely. Are we up for the task? Absolutely. We were built for this. We were incarnated for this. We agreed to come in together at this time. How beautiful. Hello, soul family. It is so good to be with you and to know that on this mystical, magical journey, that at some point we said, yes, I'm going to walk with these people, or paddle with these people, down through this amazing river of evolution to the ocean of possibility that is a realization of who we are. And at the end of that, there is a pure and clear reflection of the truth of the divinity that we are. And guess what? Not just at the end, but all along the way. all along the way, there is a place and a time to reflect with each other and ourselves that we are divine in essence, that we are made of love, that we are here for love, that we can be love, and that we are here now. We don't have to struggle about figuring it out. All we got to do is flow it out. Yes? Yes. Let's do it. Yes. I invite you to affirm with me. And know that when you get into fear, that your life is fail-safed in love, okay? Let's know that. Let's say this together. My life is fail-safed in love. I let divine love flow through my heart and help evolve my human family. Amen.